Michael Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about
The World Atlas of Cheese by Nancy Erkoff-Stork. This is the sixth episode. And can I say, there is such an enjoyment about escaping the world of facts and, I don't know, the, you know, whether people are corrupt or not, or trying to work things out, and just keying back to the basics of reformulating everything in terms of cheese, and then also having the joy of not being up to date, the joy of reading something which is, I don't know, getting on 40 years old, and it's sort of reassuring how the world has or hasn't changed, sort of a snapshot back in the eye, sort of like going back and being thoroughly bitter. Disappointed and unsurprised by British cheeses as we go through. It's a sort of lot of story about them, but essentially they're made by pretty inhygienic, grotty conditions. The way that they blew the various blue ones, it's sort of the angst of it all. It's just awful. It's also nice reading through some of the pictures here. It's reassuringly wet pictures of Britain, some grotty streets and little just disgusting looking places. This Hebben Bridge in the Pennines, close by the industrial heart of Yorkshire, Britain's largest country, has wild moorland alternating with good pastures and industrial areas. It's sort of, they're just, you know, 1970s pictures. And of course, I just invite you to go to your nearest library and demand an Erkoff-Stork thing. So we swept across, started off Norway, went across to Sweden, Finland, down to Denmark, across to Britain, and so Denmark is sort of like cheese amazingness, and various cheeses are on the brink of extinction, and universities come and save them again, working on them. People tend to, when they have a cheese crisis, go to Switzerland, get Swiss cheese makers. So it'd be nice and interesting to know about Swiss cheese. But then you find out about this famous person who creates Havarti cheese in Denmark. I've forgotten her name, and this is the entire point of this reading, is to really strengthen my memory and cognitive power. We have here a list of delightfully short thing. We had the Iceland cheese, which was sort of like a bit of a tour of Iceland, but it's this, what cheese did they produce? I can't believe it. It was Iceland. I jumped. Iceland was before England, so we went across to Iceland and then swept back down, and Iceland has this sky cheese, which is just sort of disgusting old milk. I don't know, people can't leave milk alone, can they? It's all, certainly you've got morning milk and afternoon milk and all that aspect and the different curds and rennets. What I did find interesting is the Danish people who had their monks, same sort of monks who were set up in Denmark and started the Denmark cheese, the English cheese, but in the Middle Ages. These monks were vegetarian, somewhere towards even vegan people, and they found rennet from plants, but it's Venus flytraps and sundew plants. These are insectivorous digestive plants. So it's there. Now let's go to Ireland. So you can see Nancy has sort of swept across Scandinavia, sweeping across Denmark, and she's leaving the Netherlands for a little while. To the Irish, a gentle curtain of soft rain is part of their natural heritage, as are mild winters. In the basin-shaped island, it is badly drained, and there are many rivers, lakes, and marshes alternating with wet grasslands. Oh, okay. I suppose basin as in, oh yes. Also, it's actually a hole. The Emerald Isle is green deed, but better suited cattle raising than agriculture. All the more so as cattle can remain outside throughout the year. The cattle of Cork are famous. So are the sheep of Galloway, Corks, and Tipperary. This our shore along the Atlantic Ocean were long thought to be the boundary of the inhabitable world, and for many peoples in their westward expansion, the island of Ireland was the end of the trail. The Iron Age Celts populated Ireland, and their culture remains today a strong influence. Much later came the preachers, the Christianity, the Roman legions having ignored Ireland. Oh, yes. Then the Viking invaders, and finally the English, who would remain for many centuries. All these foreign influences, particularly that of the English, left their mark on traditional Irish culture. This race of people, although they lived on the furthest edge of the European continental shelf, must have adopted certain foods and eating habits of other nations. Cheese must have been made since time immemorial, and elsewhere in the world it would have been fresh cheese. The Scandinavian invaders who had settled in Ireland taught the Irish how to make cheese, which could be preserved. Remember that she had this Norwegian, or was it Swedish, or various cheeses that were fit for the Vikings to take, I think from the various places, I can't remember it. Following the fall of the Roman Empire, successive waves of barbarians across Europe, civilization almost disappeared. In Ireland, however, it had been preserved. When the storm subsided, the island had proved a safe refuge for culture that had been destroyed elsewhere. From numerous monasteries, monks dispersed back to the continent to preach the gospel and teach improved agricultural and daring methods. And that's an interesting aspect of it. A companion to Guinness. It would appear that the Celts are rather indifferent to cheese. There are no special Irish cheese types. The average Irishman enjoys a fairly simple but wholesome diet of milk, butter, poultry, bread, potatoes, meat, occasionally fish, more frequently because of Catholic influence. Although most of Ireland's famous lobsters and shellfish are exported abroad, precious little is left of the old Irish cheese specialties. As an indigenous companion to Guinness, only Blarney may be mentioned. A semi-hard, whole-fat cheese of 48%, with small round holes, mild flavour, somewhat resembling Danish Samso. The complete disappearance of many originally Irish cheeses does not mean that cheese is no longer made in Ireland. On the contrary, production in the dairy industry is increasing by leaps and bounds, at least tenfold during the last decade. The factories produce over 30,000 tons of cheese a year. Most of these are English cheeses, which is understandable considering the British influence. The most important being these is cheddar, 90% of which is exported. Another cheddar-like cheese called Killarney, especially made for export to Canada. Additionally, the range includes Cheshire, Wensleydale, Caerphilly, Leicester, Double Gloucester, Wexford, a Chester variety, which was first produced in 64, Blue, Gouda, Edam, Edamital, Guerbury, Camembert, Port-Salut, Pont-l'Evêque, cottage cheese, and other fresh cheeses and spreads, which they will then even tell you over a glass of start, the Irish Camembert is exported to France. Well, there you go. So Ireland was sort of like a black spot in the great cheese. She sort of felt it was a bit weird when it went to England. That was a bit strange, the Blarney. And what was the reason? The Celts are indifferent to cheese. It's a racial thing. Iron Age Celts are just not cheese people. Not judged, not more. Now, this is a picture onto the Netherlands, and I must admit, when I saw the picture of the map of Europe, I looked at Holland and I thought, look, it's showing that there's a huge dam which is IJsselmeer, which is indeed a huge dam. I didn't know that there was a dam or causeway, right? It's like the biggest dam of anything I've ever seen. And if I go back, I don't know, there's a horrible wind here. Netherlands is quite a big thing. But there is indeed a dam. So, if you look at, Nijmegen, Eindhoven, Tilburg, Utrecht, Amsterdam, The Hague, Haarlem. Now, I've been to Haarlem and Amsterdam, but I didn't know that the water outside Amsterdam was in fact a big dam, or there's a big way in front of it. I know the history of Amsterdam, which is quite a brilliant one, the story of Roman amazingness, but this is amazing. And Rotterdam, these are big dams across here. Okay. The sea would claim much of Holland if it could. Northern and western provinces of the Netherlands are below sea level, and their very existence is the outcome of age-old struggle of the Dutch and the invading ocean. Because the country is flat, save for the tiny hilly area above the south of the province of Limburg, the landscape gives the impression of a vast vastness of Holland, where the land and sea, sky become fused together. Beautiful. Even before dikes were built to protect the inhabitants from the sea, there was more than enough fertile green acres to make Netherlands a prominent dairy country. Round brick containers with perforated bottoms, apparently cheese molds, have been discovered in ancient Frankish dwellings from the 4th century AD. We learn from the 9th century records that Frisians made butter and cheese for the court of Charlemagne. During the Middle Ages, the collective efforts of farmers from all over Holland led to a prosperous period. The rise of dairy markets and the Kaswag cheese warehouse, where the cows, goats, milk, sheep, cheeses were inspected for quality and weight. Haarlem, already a dairy trade centre, from 1266, Leiden from 1303, and Leeuwarden, a Friesland, got a town warehouse in 1386. So you really made it. If you've got a cheese house, you've made it. At the same time, the export of cheese developed, first overland via the Rhine to Germany, still the biggest importer of Dutch cheese, and later, when the Dutch became the freight carriers of Europe, by sea to the farthest corners of the Baltic and Mediterranean. Looking at the bills of lading of the Dutch trading vessels during the time, it seems incredible that such enormous quantity of cheese could be produced, since the milk yield was considerably lower than it is today. The farmer cheesemakers were ill-equipped, and transport was slow. How did the Dutch do it? It's the windmills, which is all powering everything, I believe. Cattle now graze on reclaimed land that was once the sea's dominion. The elegant piebald Frisians and the robust Rongingens, with their black and white faces, further inland, along the winding rivers and waterways of the Maas, the Rhine, and Ijssel. So Ijssel, me, is a river from Haarlem, it looks like. And I don't quite understand how the Rhine gets into all of this type of stuff. This is the delta of the Rhine? I have to understand it. It says that Ijsselmeer is a new piece of Dutch geography. Cattle are herded to spotless clean dairies. I'm glad they did England, because England was like, if you want basically poo mixed in with your cheese, eat English cheese, and then if you want unhygienic orange-coloured cheese, ugh. Now, more than a third of the land here is used for cattle breeding and milk production, so that Netherlands is now the biggest cheese exporter in the world. The land of cheese. The urban areas that include Amsterdam, The Hague, Rotterdam, Utrecht are grouped to form a modern industrial heart of the Netherlands. The Randstad, Holland, between them, nestling the green countryside, is Gouda, the birthplace of Gouda cheese. Even today, there are about 1,000 Gouda cheese farms in the provinces of South Holland and Utrecht. Legend claims that the first Gouda cheese was made in the village of Stolvik. The name Stolvik is still a guarantee of extremely tasty Gouda. Well, there you go. Next time I go to have it, we'll have to remember. I've really forgotten all the various names for the cheese. Ost is the Norwegian for cheese, and then to know that their favourite cheese is not a cheese at all, that is a big thing. But here, you get the feeling that you have landed in a cheese world superpower. Traditionally, the area is not only known for production of excellent milk and cheese, but also for trade and freight. Gouda stands at the junction of two rivers, the Gouda and the Holland Ijssel. I don't, sorry, Dutch people, you'd be screaming us Australians can't pronounce it because it's the only word with two capital letters first. So it's capital I, capital J, S-S-E-L. How are you Dutch? You must have just created the rest of the Dutch language around that one. Where shipbuilders once put the resources of the wooded countryside to profitable use, and now there's no wood. In early times, Gouda was one of the five principal Dutch trading centres, with a flourishing industry in textiles, brewing, leather, poultry, dairy produce. In the 13th century, there was a thriving cattle market, and the city was marked a market held every 6 months, where English and Scottish merchants came to buy and sell the cheese. According to accounts, the old publication Gouda cheese was compared to the England's Derby cheese for freshness and density. And experiments were carried out on the farms of Derby to with mould cultures. Okay. So they stole the mould from Gouda. A good idea in Gouda's. Between the famous Gouda Town Hall and the Castle Kaswark, which dates at 1668. So, 1666, Fire of London, get your idea, Newton. Things, lots of things happening in Europe at the time. And sports a marble relief depicting an old waving trade centre over the entrance. The farmers continue to sell their cheeses according to ancient customs. It's Thursday morning, buyers inspect wagons of cheeses covered with tarpaulins and make their offers. Or rather, the buyer suggests the price and the farmer automatically declines. The buyer later returns with a second offer. It's all part of the game. The farmer suggests a higher figure. Again, the buyer walks away. But a third time, they will, no doubt, agree. The deal is completed with a slap of hands, and the farmer drives his wagon to the warehouse. The number of cheese farms has decreased over the years. Oh my God, well, I've been horrible. Remember when I had to bargain with the Egyptians? So what I like is you go England, Ireland, nothing, and then bursting onto the scene is Holland. It's just this great cheese extravaganza. The number of cheese farms has decreased over the years, so the contradictory increase in production can be put down to improved market value of Gouda farm cheese, and also the modern methods of manufacture. Since the installation of a cooling system, there is no need to process fresh milk yield twice daily, as long as been the case. Now, day cheese is made from fresh morning milk, warmed evening milk from the previous day. Ugh. Modern farmhouse. The showpiece of modern hygienic farmhouse cheesemaking is the teak cheese vat. With a stainless steel liner behind, with either hot or cold water can circulate. The vat is equipped with an electric mechanism for cutting and stirring the curd. Its capacity is 1,500 litres. An average herd of 30 calves may produce, at the height of its season, about 600 litres. The milk per milking of every, for every kilo of cheese is about 10 litres of milk is required. The making of Gouda cheese is mainly done by women, usually a farmer's wife, assisted by a daughter, and other females who come into the place. They start at 6 o'clock in the morning. Long experience has taught them exactly how much rennet and starter. And that's I don't quite understand. Rennet is the enzyme which gets casing. Starter is the bacteria. To add to a given quantity of milk in the vat. And what temperature this must be done. Cheese molds are prepared according to the yields of milk. For example, 400 litres of milk are used for 4 10-kilogram molds, or 5 8-kilogram molds, are needed. Okay, so 5 is 40. Yeah, okay, I've got that one. It's at 4 10-kilograms, or 5. That makes sense to me. The milk is curdled, is stirred, left for a while, brought to a higher temperature, and then stirred again. Then the women have determined with this expert skill that the curd pieces are the right size and consistency. They fill the mold. So you can see, oh, as you see, this is a rather stern Dutch woman. Mm. Oh, it's a, oh, God.
sounds like it will be a real stinky place, this whole place. The filling is done in one of two ways, either dividing the curd into large blocks and putting the blocks into each mould, or by crumbling the curd into the mould. This crumbling cheese later reveals many tiny small irregular holes because the air incorporated during the process. The so-called one piece shows only a few large regular holes. A cheese of great character. After the moulds have been filled, the cheese is pressed, stamped with the government milk mark for the farmhouse cheese, wrapped in a clean cloth and pressed again. A period of tiled brine bath with salt solution of the correct strength completes the main preparation. During ripening, Gouda cheese develops its characteristic smell and taste. A farmhouse cheese made from whole raw milk has a delicious aroma. There's no pasteurization here, my friends, but its Dutch hygiene is famous throughout its cheese. Evidently, also is the promise of a slightly sweet, full and often somewhat pronounced flavour that surprises the tongue again and again. The cheese remains smooth even as it gets older. Expert cheese tasters are able to recognise the region or even the farm that the particular Gouda cheese has come from. Even those with an untrained palate will be able to once recognise the subtle transformation that has occurred between the adolescent Gouda and a really mature example, one that has reached, say, the ripe old age of 12 to 14 months. The rind can become so hard that it needs cutting with a saw before you can proceed with a cheese wire knife. That's an interesting thing. The paste becomes very firm, rather like Gruyere. The flavour is slightly subtle, but full. It takes on, a wine taster would say, a character of great breeding. Okay, she's done her Dutch marketing thing, has gone beyond the pale. Karlsdrup, now remember this is by Nancy Urquhart-Stork, and she realised that she is giving you a lot of facts, but she is actually, if you'd like it, an espionage agent for Dutch cheese. She's drawn you into this book, which has been bought here. I'm sure you've got your Russian II World Atlas. If you don't have one, there is one in Australia, so remember that. Karlsdrup, a Dutch fondue. Of course, the Dutch fondue is amazing. A small quantity of farmhouse Gouda is retained by the farmer on the use in the kitchen. Generous slices are cut for sandwiches, and the rind is fried with potatoes and added to mashed potatoes for stews. Go! I didn't know what to use with my rind. A traditional, simple utilitarian dish, particularly convenient in the past, when busy farm schedule left little time for elaborate preparation, is Gouda Karlsdrup, which is cheese which is cooked with milk and eaten in a manner of Swiss fondue, but with brown bread or boiled potatoes. Rather rustic country dish, it takes, was later taken up by the city dwellers who served it in more elegant fashion with French bread and fondue forks, dipping the bread into the Karlsdrup contained in a fireproof dish over a small flame. The farmers contemptuous of Karlsdrup's newly acquired sophistication in a communal fashion that is considered unhygienic dropped it from their menu. So they think, the city dwellers, we don't like you anymore. This is full of life. You're wondering what was the thing. They have the flower power resolution? No. Did they have protests against the Vietnam War? No. Were they concerned about, after the stress of convention, they weren't concerned about anything, but they were concerned about city dwellers taking their cheese-eating habits. Oh my god, this goes on. This is a cheese superhouse. If you ever see the US fleet on, pull into your port, you'll know they're there. But here is the equivalent in terms of cheese, the most monstrous cheese automation superpower. This is, in the book you see all little countries with little farms and little bits of cheese, and now we hear a full integrated factory. Now I'll do the integrated factory. A unique, typical quantity of farmhouse Gouda was notably absent from the factory product. This isn't to say factory Gouda is robbed of a marked degree of excellence. On the contrary, it's widely exported and enjoyed throughout the world. The factory cheese, however, lacks the subtle, distinct character of farmhouse variety. For the connoisseur, the surprise element is gone. That's what I think. Why we've gone to Facebook and social media. Our cheese has just got no surprise. You eat your cheese. it tastes like cheese. There's no surprise. Let's go over to my mobile phone and do all that texty stuff. A safe and sure product. Since the factory Gouda is made over a wide area and is not restricted to certain regions, since the preparation has occurred often demands production on a massive scale, utilizing 10,000 litres of milk. This loss of individuality is highly surprising. Furthermore, the milk may come from considerable distance and may be the product of a number of different farms. For this reason, milk is pasteurized, so that possible bacteria which may cause defects in the cheese are destroyed. That's what I said before. I couldn't see any pasteurization. The microorganism that create the farmhouse character, so destroyed. And as are inevitably the microorganisms that create the farmhouse character. In one respect, the factory cheese has an advantage of being standardized. The shopper knows in advance what the cheese will taste like. That's exactly what I say. This is what's destroyed modern culture. There are three different kinds from which to choose according to preference. Very mild young Gouda, a more matured aromatic variety, and the fully matured old piquant type. The Locus, or baby Gouda, is a small model Gouda, always eaten wild, young and fresh. Amsterdam cheese is a Gouda variety with an increased moisture content and very smooth and full flavour. There is also spiced Gouda, a flavour with cumin seed which is eaten when young. It has spicy, creamy taste that is best supported by a slice of brown bread or toast. This is your encyclopedia. What, like, the encyclopedia goes into... Like, it damns the Celts, and it says, Celts, you just really didn't get cheese, did you, Celts? And then here, going on, you find out about what smorgasbord and the other bread and butter table and this bread and butter, stage. But let's listen to this, and then I'll read you the factory. Gouda in the kitchen. Because its firm consistency varies with age, Gouda has many applications in the kitchen. Irrespective of whether the cheese comes from a farm or a factory, the versatile Gouda is excellent in many types of bread for cooking. Choose a young Gouda when you require melting cheese, a mature Gouda when you cheese to serve whole or remains visible in the dish, as well as cheese or Gouda cooked in dishes with sliced cheese or baked cheese schnitzels, an old cheese when you need to grate it. Oh, that solves a whole heap of problems. What do you do with old cheese? You grate the old cheese. Gouda can be used for a number of recipes calling for a firm cheese or grating cheese, a quality it shares with Gruyere and cheddar. It may also be used on the basis of such sauces as Mornay sauce and certain soups such as onion soup or Dutch cheese soup. Dutch cheese soup? What? Dutch cheese soup. In souffles, the fish dishes where a slice of cheese is melted on the fish. It may also serve as a savoury omelette in form of fondue, such as previously mentioned, castrup, which the people took to the city and they said, crikey, we're not going to do that one anymore. The bloody people are doing it. If I can tell you, Dutch countryside, they speak Australian. It's just all put on there and you put Dutch... They speak Dutch. They only speak Dutch for the tourists. The rest of the time they are speaking broad Australian accents. Besides the traditional cartwheel shape, Gouda can be made square or loaf-shaped forms, as in the case with Edam cheese, although the latter is normally globe-shaped. You can spot the difference by looking at the official label. 48% indicates full-fat Gouda, while 40% refers to Edam, which has a lower fat content. Well, there you go, I didn't know. Below a picture, arrival of milk in the modern cheese factory. An operator controls the fully mechanized process, and here's this person sitting like a nuclear reactor, all these buttons. Oh my god. Oh, it's classic. So you've got these milk things from the farm, and this robot is picking up the milk, churning, putting in. In 76, a cheese making tank. Starter and mixed into pasteurized milk, yellow, this color, which coagulates in approximately 20 to 30 minutes. The curd is cut and stirred automatically according to pre-selected program. Part of the whey is run off, and the temperature during this 1.5 to 2 hour treatments is increased from 30 degrees Celsius to 35 degrees Celsius. B. When the curd is ready, it's transferred to the buffer tank. More whey may be run off from the curd whey mixture. C. Wet curd is pumped into filling apparatus, the precise weight of curd is poured into moulds, nowadays made of steel and plastic rather than teak wood, arrived on conveyor belt. Immediately after filling, circular press descends and moulds where it expels more of the curds, D, more whey from the curd. D, the filled cheese mould travels to the press, E, they are pressed for 1 to 8 hours under a large hydraulic press. There is now a tendency to use higher pressures for a shorter period of time, since this makes it possible for continuous flow of production. Yes, this is, it goes in. Oh my god, this conveyor belt's steam. F, after pressing the cheeses, still in their molds, move slowly up and finally down the high stack of cheeses. This waiting period between the beginning press and salted improves the quality of the cheese. G, they are taken out of their molds and are quite firm. The cheese have developed a rind and have lost most of the excess moisture. They are now ready for a brine bath. Oh my god, they're going for a brine bath. K, but it goes up to L, mind you. Finally, the cheeses are transferred to ripening rooms. Often, newly made cheeses are brought by wholesalers. Gouda is marketed on various degrees of maturity. Young Gouda, cheese has been ripened for at least 3 weeks. Semi-mature, 2 to 7 months. While quite piquant, crumbly old Gouda is matured for 10 to 12 months. H, big containers loaded with cheeses are loaded to the brine baths and taken in and out again after. Oh, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H. Oh, I think I've missed one. G, I've gone out, I've missed the brine. But, oh, that's why K is there. He's just gone around in a circle. So, scrap the K. H, big containers loaded with cheese are loaded down. So, all these cheeses are loaded down. The salt bath serves mainly functions. It improves the flavour and structures of the cheese. It acts as a preservative and promotes the formation of a dry, hard rind. L, this is a close-up of the modern polythene cheese mould from top to bottom. We've got, this is a modern cheese. I don't quite understand it. Plastic molds have proved much better than stainless steel ones. Allow the curd to cool quickly. Traditional wooden molds are still the best. Taste and flavour develop better during the ripening period. But the difference is, in an automotive factory, the wooden molds are too heavy and clumsy to handle and are being replaced. Oh, gee. Oh my god. Godfather, I've never seen those. Oh, this is Honda. Sort of like the, have you seen those famous pictures of jet fighters with the arm that's just the jet fighter and there's this arm that's here. This is the cheese we've fallen on top of them. I'm reading through to, well, I'll finish off Holland because it's, they're going to Belgium and Luxembourg. Or Belgium and Luxembourg. Oh, they get a stinking cheese. Okay, but Eden cheese is named after the old harbour of Yeshmeer, north of Amsterdam, in the centre of the province of North Holland, where Frisian Edam cheese was first marketed and exported abroad. Edam, with a fat content of 40%, is a little less smooth and less creamy than Gouda. It has a slightly sourish taste when young. In fact, this is one of the marketing problems associated with Edam. It's often sold before the magnificent mature flower has time to develop. The lower fat content of Edam is due to it partly being made from skimmed milk. Gouda is more fat, is made from the whole cow's milk. All the world recognizes the familiar bright red or yellow ball of cheese, its wax coating, yet Edam is seldom waxed for home market. The process is reserved for export cheeses, which are coloured before leaving the warehouse. The treatment gives the cheeses added protection. The focal point of cheese industry is not the town of Edam, however, but that of Alkmaar. Here, on Friday morning, the cheese market comes an international tourist attraction. Members of the Cheese Bearers Guild, the last of the medieval guilds, dressed in white suits and hats of different colours to identify various warehouses they represent. Oh my god, they are. Got different hats on. They've got some orange, yellow, blue hats. The golden balls of Eden cheese, or flat wheels of Gouda, are piled high upon wooden sleds of a decidedly Japanese-looking design. Oh, Japanese sleds. Oh, they do look like sleds, yeah. Grey brick surface of the marketplace. Are pulled by the cheese porters over the grey brick surface of the marketplace. Eating cheese has always been a profitable product. There's been a warehouse in the market since the 13th century. Anson merchant acknowledged this by helping to finance reclaiming of the land near Yishmir to provide more pastures. The original whole milky living was prepared in more or less the same way as farmhouse gouda. Its globe shape easily to transport. Okay, that's why it's globe shape. You can roll it. Globe shape is spherical. Not unlike large grapefruit, came from Edam cheese mold known as the Karlsruhe. The Karlsruhe meaning cheese head. Oh, klop. Klop. Karlsklop. Means, oh, so Kars means cheese and klop means head. Karlsklop, you. Oh, Karlsklop, you. Often used as a helmet during the riots. What? Riots? What? The Karlsklop cheese head was often used as a helmet during the riots, which is said why the Dutch are known by many countries by this nickname. Edam's spherical shapes, they just mentioned riots. Why would you riot if you have so much cheese? I don't understand. Especially as the cheese are varying, people are all confused about the cheese, not concerned about their riots. Even spherical shape is almost unique amongst cheese, and the cheese by the tendency of the curd to become very firm very readily in an early stage of preparation. The explorer's cheese. Since the 19th century, on both the farms of small factories, Edam cheese has been made from a mixture of whole milk and the skimmed ewe milk of the previous day. In modern factories, the old wooden cheese molds, the Karlsruhe forms, have been replaced by plastic molds. The cheesecloth no longer used. Unlike Gouda farm, Edam is no longer made. The smallest variety today is Bader Edam cheese, weighing about 1 kilogram. Is a cheese that is eaten young and is less tasty than the larger type, which weighs 1.7 kilograms. Comiscas, in France called Milot for marketing reasons, is colored orange with the Andetto dye, is even heavier. While Meadbrae, the largest Edam of all, is the largest Edam of all. In different forms, there are handsome Brook Cas, so Cas means cheese, is less salty than regular Edam, and the main used in hotels. I knew that when I was going to a Dutch hotel, I shout out, "This is not Edam!" And they were all thinking, "This is not Edam!" Some Edam cheeses are spiced with cumin. The keeping properties of Edam has been known to be remarkable. In 1956, an expedition to the South Pole found a tin of raw milk Edam left behind by Scott. Expedition in 1912. The natural protein fat degradation had been at work for 40 years and the cheese was sharp and not spoiled. There you go. So, that's a multiple choice. What did Dutch explorers find? I'm sorry, they are Dutch. Going to the South Pole, they found a cheese left for 40 years in the polar regions. Leiden cheese is made from a number of large farms along the Old Rhine in the Dune region near Leiden. It's a spicy, piquant cheese with partly skimmed milk and buttermilk. In the past, the fresh milk was poured into oval vats that stood in cold running water and left for the cream to rinse. Today, the milk is left with skimming after cooling in the same tub in which the cheese is made. In the 12 to 24 hours, the cream is skimmed off, left for a day to sour, then churned into fairly assertive farm butter. I like it, assertive farm butter. But just, what are you doing here? I'm the assertive farm butter. What are you looking at? You mentioned butter actually talking to you. The cheesemaker, in the meantime, warms up a portion of the skimmed pre-ripened milk, using it to bring the remainder of the milk to curdling temperature. Then, buttermilk and rennet are added. The curd is stirred and cut. The whey is drawn off. A quantity of curd is now separated from the rest, into which the cumin seeds is kneaded, a treatment which, to a large extent, dries the curd. The traditional way of kneading, where the farmer would lean with clean feet, come back, a farmer with clean feet, who you are, I'm a farmer. Well, what's your special? I've got clean feet, he would say in Dutch. There's Kaasklop. Kaasklop. Kaas. You Kaasklop foot. In the way, and afterwards tread the curd, now considered unhygienic. This is rather a pity, since the very special structure that was characteristic of Leiden cheese no longer develops. The spiced kneaded curd was sandwiched between different cheese. okay. It is sandwiched between two layers of the remaining unspiced curd, bound with cheesecloths, and spaced in a mould. The cheese is then pressed for 20 to 24 hours before receiving a second pressing with a mould cloth removed. The sides of the cheese develop the spherical shape, and the cheese markers applied, consisting of two cross keys of the city of Leiden, which became the broad and less and fat content figure of 30%+. Now, there was another cheese, which also had cross keys for a different reason. Oh no, it goes on. Punishment and bee stings. Leiden farmhouse cheese requires a long period of ripening. In the final stages of ripening, the rind is coloured with an application of an annatto dye, which is well rubbed in. The treatment has largely replaced the old-fashioned method of rubbing the cheese rind with a mixture of colouring matter and bee stings. Bee stings is the first milk given to a child, a cow, after calving. It's much thicker, or this is bee stings, would be colostrum, I suppose. It's the first milk given by the cow after calving. It's much thicker, richer than ordinary milk, and contains an unusual amount of protein. This is colostrum. This is mixed with the annatto and applied to the rind, which requires a fine, glossy, mahogany-coloured protective layer. This is not dissimilar to the issues by the makers of old English Scotch cheese, which are used to be rubbed with a substance obtained from decomposing vegetable matter. Bee stings used to be stored in a pot, since it was not always available. After several weeks, it began to smell rather repulsive, to say the least. Some farmers used to punish their children by forcing them to sit by the bee stings pot. Corrective measure, which added very little increase in consumption and appeal of Leiden cheese on palms. Irrespective of bee stings treatment, a well-ripened Leiden cheese is a very piquant and almost sharp taste, but the dry, elastic structure, the fat content varies from 32 to 36%. The indication 20+ on the government cheese mark is in fact too low, although legally prescribed. The farmer ignores this and puts their own traditional marks of 30+ on their cheeses. Good on you, farmers. Look, the Dutch government, that's what they were writing. I couldn't understand why they were writing. They had this reason. Oh, they've got a picture of someone and he's wearing a hat and his palms are facing outwards as he's doing his cheese darts. See, who could believe cheese could be this interesting? The farmer, and the cheese, this is the Dutch. We're all hygienic, but this cheese, which is made out of rotten milk. The farmers who would do this sort of thing would be the very Dutch family, the untrustworthy Dutch. This factory cheese has a piquant taste, but less sharp than the farmhouse variety. You can imagine that have an automatic robot doing it. Oh, God, it keeps on going. The beautiful black and white Friesian cattle are one of the finest dairy breeds in the world. Surveilled! In spite of its indigenous stock, Friesian is not known for its cheese, because the manufacture of butter has always had a top priority. The lean, skinny Friesian Kantkast, so Kast means cheese, and Friesian Nagelkras has a hard time competing with the farmhouse Leiden and Delft cheese, and even Delft fell out of favour and is now extinct. Oh, this is like reading this Delft. Oh, I want a Delft cheese. Friesians, however, survived. The quantity of starter is all important in making Friesian cheese. So it's the addition of fresh buttermilk and the milling of curd and hot water bath. Cheeses are also subject to long pressing covered ripening. The process is not unlike the use of English cheddar. Okay, there's another superpower here coming up. Belgium and Luxembourg has a huge... I thought it was Belgium and Luxembourg. French is going to be just eye-watering and complicated to do.
Cumin and caraway seeds are wonderfully addition to rye dry bread, which make the Northern European Roman times. They are also used to flavour several Scandinavian Dutch cheese. Perhaps the ancient bread makers also made cheese, decided to try to spice the cheeses with the bread, and thus the taste of spiced cheeses developed. Were you worried? Now you know why. Nagelkäse is a spiced cheese flavoured with cumin and cloves, hence the name. Nagel means nail, refers to the shape of a clove, and cheese goes in the glass of Gewürztraminer. Unspiced Nagelkäse is a product of processed cheese industry. The common spice Kärntner, like the Leiden, is so like the Leiden factory cheese that it shares the same classification. After about 6 months of ripening, the aroma and flavour are fully developed. Both these cheeses have 40 to 20% variety. Later processes as high moisture contacts, which makes it smooth in spite of its low percentage of fat. Oh, I sort of understand. It's more fatty, it's more fatty, more buttery. The accident that led to Kärntner. So it was an accident, but it's a happy, happy story. During the wet winters, before the days of improved storage conditions, eating cheeses in warehouses of tenant farmers sometimes collapsed into strong-smelling flat discs with orange-coloured rind flora of Corhine bacteria. So it's Corhine bacteria. And when cut, these cheeses stuck to the knife. The farmers found, however, that the knife sticker was a delicacy. The Netherlands Institute for Dairy Research experimented with the accidental cheese and developed the Kärntner cheese. Oh, what to do? A totally new type of creamy flavour. Wow, I've missed out it. So remember, you've heard it here from Nancy Stork from Preserve from 76's Kärntner cheese. So when you go to your officer saying, why are you speeding? I'm just speeding to get some Kärntner cheese. K-E-R, hem cheese. It's from a rotten Edam. Since 1906, strict controls regulate the high standard of Dutch cheeses, and those that pass the inspection receive government marks which indicates the country of origin, Holland, the producer and the production date and code, and in most cases the name of the cheese and the fat content. Export cheeses are even more thoroughly inspected than we have mentioned. The Dutchers are the biggest cheese exporters in the world. Even so, it is odd that cheeses fail to play a more important role in the Dutch kitchen. Cheese is used in sandwiches and steaks, but rarely used in dishes apart from a few homely applications in Gouda and the fondue style kaasdroop or hoedschnip, white bread with a slice of cheese, topped cheese, rye bread cut into small pieces. Over the last few years, however, foreign influence has brought about certain changes. The Dutch cheese features in many imported international recipes. Coming up next is Belgium and Luxembourg. This is just a real tour of cheese.
Another podcast, another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.